This is the second sermon on Matthew 11, verse 12, preached by Christopher Love, who was martyred in 1651. Matthew 11, 12, "And from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force." The doctrinal part being finished, I now come to application. And this doctrine may be useful in five respects. First, for reproof. Second, for comfort. Third, for instruction. Fourth, for caution. And fifth, to stir up our lamentation. First, this will reprove several sorts of persons. Out of this quiver, I may draw 10 arrows of reproof that may pierce into the hearts of 10 several sorts of men. First, it reproves those who are violent in the ways of sin, that put forth themselves to the utmost and draw out their strength in ways of wickedness, that like those in Jeremiah 8:6, that turn to their course as the horse rusheth into the battle. As a horse that is so fierce in the war that he rusheth into it without fear of danger, so the Spirit of God setteth forth the wickedness of men's hearts. By nature, they rush into sin, not considering what they do, as the horse. See what Job saith concerning the horse in Job 39:19. "Hast thou given the horse strength? Hast thou clothed his neck with thunder? Canst thou make him afraid as a grasshopper? The glory of his nostrils is terrible. He paweth in the valley and rejoiceth in his strength. He goeth on to meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear and is not affrighted, neither turneth he back from the sword." In verse 25, he saith among the trumpets, "Aha, aha," and he smelleth the battle afar off, the thunder of the captains and shooting. Even in this manner do wicked men rush into wickedness. No fear nor wit can restrain them. No dangers nor threatenings either from God or man can keep them in. In Jeremiah 2:23, they are as a swift dromedary traversing her ways. Their course is evil and their force is not right. Jeremiah 23:10, their hearts are fully set in them to do evil. Ecclesiastes 8:11, they weary themselves to commit iniquity. Jeremiah 9:5, the people labor in the fire and weary themselves for very vanity. Habakkuk 2:13, they sleep not except they have done mischief, and their sleep is taken away except they cause some to fall. Proverbs 4:16. The second, this reproves those that instead of an holy violence are guilty of tumultuous violence, that by force and power disturb humane societies, destroying laws and government, that do as Antiochus did in Daniel 7:25. He spoke great words against the Most High and wore out the saints of the Most High and thought to change times and laws. Third, this reproves those that instead of an holy violence are guilty of an oppressing violence, which is the sin chiefly of rich men. Micah 6:12, "For the rich men thereof are full of violence. It is they that grind the faces of the poor." Micah 2:2, "They covet fields and take them by violence, and houses and take them away, and so they oppress a man in his house." Amos 3:10, "They know not to do right, who store up violence and robbery in their palaces." Proverbs 4:17, "They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence." Fourth, this reproves those who are eager and violent in their pursuits after the things of this life, but not so after spiritual things. We are all upon the spur, all upon the wing after the world. Here is violence upon violence, labor upon labor for these things which we may have, and yet be never the better. And want them, and yet be never the worse. Covetous men are said to pant after the dust of the earth, Amos 2:7. So eager are they in their pursuit after the world, as if they were almost out of breath. They return at evening. They make a noise like a dog and go about the city. Psalm 59, 6 and 14. No creature is so sensible of hunger as a dog. Covetous men are like dogs towards the world, as if they were made up all of desires. But towards the things of eternity, we are as if we were all stoics and had no passions in us. As hot as fire for earth, and as cold as any ice for heaven. Oh, how many pant after the earth who have no breathing after heaven. Fifthly, this reproves those who are violent opposers of the gospel. As the former may be called a worldly violence, so this may be called a persecuting violence. Such was the violence of Paul before his conversion. Acts 26:11. I punished them oft in every synagogue, and compelled them to blaspheme. And being exceedingly mad against them, I persecuted them even unto strange cities. The scribes and Pharisees are said to be filled with madness against Christ after the miracle was wrought in curing the man with the withered hand. Luke 6:11. There are some that understand my text of this persecuting violence. It is called a rage reaching up to heaven, 2 Chronicles 28:9. Sixth, this reproves such who account an holy zeal and violence in the ways of religion to be only a furious frenzy. Such were they in Acts 2:13. They said, these men are filled with new wine, when the apostles were zealous in the preaching of the gospel. Such were the friends of Christ when he was zealous and fervent in the doing of his Father's will, and so intent upon it that he had no leisure to eat his meat. They went to lay hold of him, for they said he is beside himself. Mark 3:21. The like censure did Festus pass on Paul when he was zealous to win men to the gospel. He said, thou art beside thyself. Much learning doth make thee mad. Acts 26:24. Basil, when he was passionately eager against the Arian heresy, was interpreted a symptom of his dotage. If men will not be baffled out of their religion, reformation, etc., they are esteemed but furious zealots, men of violent spirits. Thus it fared with zealous Paul, 2 Corinthians 5:13. Whether we are beside ourselves, it is to God, or whether we be sober, it is for your cause. Seventh, this reproves those who were once violent and zealous in religion, but now their zeal is abated. We have a proverb, nothing that is violent is durable. If the violent motion proceeds from some external artificial cause and not from a rooted, stirring principle within. Many that go in the ways of God merely from an external principle, it may be credit or profit, though they may be seemingly violent for a time, yet their violence will not last. They will not be steadfast in the ways of religion and in a Christian course. Some who have flourished in the spring have had a withering time, their fruit decayed as the leaves fall off in autumn. It may be said of many in regard of their souls, as it was said of David in regard of his body, when he was old and stricken in years, they covered him with cloths, and he got no heat. 1 Kings 1:1. Many, though they are plied with ordinances, can get no heat in them. Augustine observes it of many in his days that would, at their first conversion, pray frequently and live holily. But after a while, they would grow more remiss and pray more coldly and lightly than they did before. There are few of them, few of whom, after long profession of religion, it can be said, as it was said of Moses in Deuteronomy 34:7, his eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. Many are like Asa, their end is worse than their beginning. Eighth, this reproves those that content themselves with moderation in the matters of religion, that account a dram of zeal enough for a talent of discretion. As Mr. Greenham said, many men are of this opinion that religion is dangerous, and that unholy violence in religion is attended with troubles and dangers, and therefore it is best to be moderate in religion. There are many of these men in our days. Otherwise, religion had never come to so low an ebb as it now is. It was the saying of one that men may be religious, but then they must not be too zealous. They must not be too violent for the ways of God, for then they are called men of hot and furious spirits. Men, it seems, must not love religion too much. Anima quotes Tarnovius, who mentions a sort of men that brought in an opinion which he calls a new gospel, that if a man perform the external duties of religion, if he go to church, hear the word, pray, etc., it was sufficient for salvation. Of this temper, Gallio was in Acts 18:17. Gallio cared for none of those things. A little religion will serve the turn. Most of the statists and politicians of this world are of this temper, which God will one day account a Laodicean lukewarmness or timorous cowardice. Geographers who write of the situation of England say that it is between the torrid and the frigid zone, neither hot nor cold. I wish our hearts were not like our land. Ninth, this reproves those that express more violence outwardly than they have inwardly. There are many men that will hear sermons on Lord's days and lectures on weekdays, speak well of religion and of the ways and people of God. But if you look to them in their families and in their closets, you shall find them of another temper. These men are like pepper, hot in the mouth, cold in the stomach. I may resemble such to a pot boiling over the fire, hot at the top, cold at the bottom. So some men are boiling hot in the mouth, but their hearts are cold and frozen. As it is with men sick of a fever, the face and the hands and other external parts of the body burn when the heart shakes and quivers with cold. Tenth, this reproves those who all their life remain dull and sluggish in religion, that like carriers' horses keep their ordinary pace. They will not go beyond their baiting place. They are like dromedaries, swift in the ways of sin, but like the dull ass, slow in the ways of God. The firstling of other beasts was to be offered to God, but not the firstling of an ass. Exodus 13:13, and every firstling of an ass thou shalt redeem with a lamb, and if thou wilt not redeem it, thou shalt break its neck. To note that of the sluggish and dull hearts, the very best services are not acceptable to God. The snail is reckoned among the unclean creatures. Leviticus 11:30. Those hearts that are of this dull constitution are impure and odious in the sight of God, and thus much shall serve by way of reproof. And secondly, this doctrine is useful for comfort, and that first to ministers and second to hearers. First to ministers, and for three reasons. First, though there is here is matter of trouble, yet no fear of guilt if thou discharge thy duty faithfully, though not successfully. Ezekiel 3:19, if thou warn the wicked, and he turn not from his wickedness, nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity, but thou hast delivered thy soul. Acts 20:26, when Paul had used his utmost endeavors at Ephesus, he vindicates himself thus, I take you to record this day that I am pure from the blood of all men. Acts 18:6. When Paul preached to the Jews, and they would not obey the gospel, he shook his raiment and said unto them, your blood be upon your own heads. I am clean. From henceforth I will go to the Gentiles. Though a minister doth all his days plow the rocks and sow the sands and spend his strength in vain, yet this will bring no guilt upon a minister's conscience. For though it be the minister's duty to preach the word, yet it is God's work to convert the soul. Second, God rewards ministers according to their labor, not success. 2 Corinthians 2:15, "For we are unto God a sweet savor of Christ, in them that are saved and in them that perish." The father pays the nurse, though the child die. The apothecary's bill must be paid, though the patient die. So God will reward ministers, though success be not answerable to their endeavors. Isaiah 49:4, "Then I said, I have labored in vain and have spent my strength for naught and in vain. Yet surely my judgment is with the Lord, and my work with my God," or the reward of my work. Third, the word may live in the hearers' hearts when the minister is dead. John 4:36-37, "He that reapeth receiveth wages and gathereth fruit unto life eternal, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. And herein is that saying true, one soweth and another reapeth. As a wicked man doth hurt after his death, so a good man doth good." 2 Kings 23:15. Jeroboam's wickedness proved a snare to Israel in the days of Josiah, which was 360 years after his death. And David's example did good on Josiah 400 years after. 2 Kings 23:2, "Josiah did that which was right in the sight of the Lord and walked in all the ways of David his father." Second, as here is comfort for ministers, so also here is comfort to hearers. And that for three reasons. First, God never expected all should attain the same measure of grace. Although in Luke 8:8, the seed that fell in good ground is said to bear 100-fold, yet in Matthew 13:23, the grounds differed. And some brought forth but 60, some but 30. Christ hath lambs in his fold as well as sheep, babes in his house as well as strong men. It may be what is wanting in a sudden and short violence is made up in solidity. Oaks grow not so fast as the willow trees, but they grow more solidly. Third, God will cherish the smallest beginnings of good in the hearts of his people. Canticle 7:12, "Let us go up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine flourish, whether the tender grapes appear, the pomegranates bud forth. There will I give thee my loves." The Lord Jesus took notice not only of the strong and grown grapes, but also of the tender grapes, not only of the fruit, but of the buddings. The very buddings of grace are accepted. And how should this comfort weak Christians and encourage them to increase with the increase of God and to get more of his holy violence in heavenly things? Matthew 12:20, "A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoking flax he will not quench, till he send forth judgment unto victory." He speaks there of new converts, holy desires, and gracious resolutions in a poor soul. Though they do but smoke and not burn, yet Jesus Christ will not quench them till he have brought forth judgment to victory, by which he means till they come to be perfect men and women in Christ Jesus.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. You are welcome to make copies and give them to those in need. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. It is likely that the sermon or book that you just listened to is also available on cassette or video, or as a printed book or booklet. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's EDMONTON, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."